This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. Many of ex-Typhoon Halong's impacts are tangible and concrete, like damage to infrastructure and calls for village relocation. But some of the greatest impacts may be invisible. Jess Zhang, a freelance journalist writing for The Margin, recently co-published a story with KYUK about youth mental health in the wake of the storm. The piece, titled Haunted by Halong, looks at data around disasters and examines potential solutions for the mental toll of climate-related trauma. I spoke with Zhang about what emerged in her reporting in Western Alaska and what the path forward may look like for impacted youth. A warning to listeners, this conversation covers the topic of suicide. So for this story, you spoke with a lot of people up the chain. You spoke with Representative Nelly Jimmy, as well as school counselors, and you also spoke with evacuated kids and young adults. In your reporting, where did you find what the officials and the data were saying? Where did that overlap with what you were hearing from the youth directly?
Yeah, I think it was largely about the timeline of kind of disaster recovery. So based on what we know from the research about trauma responses post-disaster, it can take some time for these emotional responses to manifest. So in the initial stages, you know, post-disaster, post-Halong, families might be focused on attending to their immediate needs, getting housing, getting food, applying for FEMA assistance. They have places to direct their energy towards. And there is like research of disasters globally that shows that many kind of mental health responses, such as anxiety, depression, PTSD, appear in the roughly 3 to 6 months after a disaster occurs. So based on my interviews, this seems, you know, to be happening with youth in the region. So many of the social workers I spoke with through the school district talked about how they're seeing more trauma bubble up in these like months after the disaster. That may be right away when teens or kids were transferred to different school districts. They might not have been ready to talk about what they're feeling yet, or about nightmares they're experiencing, flashbacks they're experiencing linked to the disaster. But that, you know, 6 months after, it's starting to come up more and they're able to kind of allude to it, talk about trouble sleeping, and symptoms of depression and anxiety and kind of isolation they're feeling.
One thing that I thought was super strong about your piece was you were able to zoom out a little bit and examine climate-related, you know, impacts on mental health, including rates of suicide across other regions of the world. What parallels does the impact of ex-Typhoon have with some of these other global events?
Research that I found especially helpful for this reporting in Bangladesh with teens that were living in flood-prone areas that showed that these teens exhibited significantly higher rates of anxiety and depression than those in low flood regions. And the reason I found this especially useful in informing my reporting is that it's not just Halong that, you know, youth in villages like Quig are facing in terms of climate threats. Many of them have lived through and experienced kind of escalating flooding in recent years, not just fall storms, but also other types of, you know, spring flooding and erosion. Youth have been experiencing kind of repeat and persistent climate events, and it kind of structures their day-to-day, their school year, the way they think about seasons. And so in Bangladesh, at least, the study found that the flooding not only contributed to these mental health impacts, but also kind of a sense of cognitive overload, which is what researchers called it, which kind of limits young people's ability to plan for the future because they're constantly preoccupied with these kind of even smaller scale disasters and interruptions to their day-to-day. And so when I spoke with young people in my interviews, many of them expressed kind of similar feelings of apathy, of numbness that are making it difficult to not only move past last October, but also to kind of solidify their outlook for the future.
Your piece also looked at solutions and ways that the region is looking to support impacted youth with mental health. You touched on YKHC's Chahi Chahak program, as well as the way that ways that LKSD counselors are approaching aid. Could you tell me what stood out to you?
In some ways, rural healthcare gaps are, endemic across the country and across regions, but from school counselors, Representative Jimmy and mental health advocates alike, I heard that there's a particular lack in terms of crisis response options for villages, which can result in, law enforcement response to mental health crises or, wait times of up to, 6 months for folks to see providers. And so this was echoed by youth who told me about, not knowing where to go to get support, especially for kind of not just the crisis of, when you're in crisis, but also, just to talk about and process kind of what happened to them. I also wanted the piece to, like you said, mention solutions and not to dismiss all the great work that's happening in the region because, YKHC school social workers are doing a ton of frontline work with the resources they have. And the district is implementing trauma training for all their staff this summer in preparation for the fall school year. And Indigenous-led programs like Jalik Jog exist and are very built out and have a lot of kind of resources or research and backing behind them, but they just need to be further invested in or maybe further supported in these efforts.
That was freelance journalist Jess Zhang speaking with me, Samantha Watson, about her recent article written for The Margin and co-published with KYUK, titled Haunted by Halong. Listen to the full interview at KYUK, where you can also find a link to the full article piece. Evidence of the measles virus was found in Anchorage wastewater in July, according to state epidemiologists. The data is from a national pilot program analyzing wastewater for certain pathogens. Joe McLaughlin is head epidemiologist for the state.
We've got at least one, maybe several people in the Anchorage sewer shed catchment area that had measles around these dates. And we don't know who they were, where they were, or whether transmission was occurring.
The data is from a new pilot program funded by a national nonprofit organization that uses a highly sensitive process to analyze Anchorage's wastewater. City wastewater tested positive for evidence of measles on July 7th, 8th, 9th, and 14th. But the state doesn't have comparable data for dates beyond mid-July. McLaughlin says more data is likely to come in by early August. He says officials don't know yet if the test results are due to a traveler passing through or an Anchorage resident, but clinicians should be vigilant and on the lookout for measles.
Anybody who presents to the urgent care, the emergency department, or in for a routine clinic visit, seeing a child with an acute viral illness that's compatible with measles, they should go ahead and test them and put them in isolation if they think that they do have measles.
The best way to prevent measles transmission is through vaccination, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Typically, children get vaccinated before kindergarten. Symptoms for measles include a rash, high fever, a cough and congestion, tiny white spots in the mouth, and red, watery eyes. If you or a family member has symptoms, it's best to call a clinic before getting tested to prevent other patients from being exposed. This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Genomchit coming up.